Season 2 of Love in Context podcast welcomes you. Get ready for engaging, unscripted conversations with your hosts, Ben and Spencer. Our mission remains unchanged: to explore the Bible through the powerful lens of love.
In this new season, we'll embark on a journey together, unearthing fresh insights and gaining deeper understanding of how we can love God and live out our faith in practical ways.
So let's dive into this season of Love in Context, where love and the context of the Bible intersect to transform our lives.
We're back, and we're looking, well, maybe worse than ever. But if you're on the YouTube, we switched to a different camera, and now you can see us better. So
yes.
Either you're welcome or we're sorry.
Well, it all depends.
Yeah.
If they liked what they saw before or if they didn't like what they saw before. So
yeah, it's not good when your wife is like, hey, maybe use the fuzzy camera again.
Yep.
All right. Well, this is our last filler episode. We're going to be starting the miniseries in the Book of James next week. We are just finalizing scheduling people.
But summer in Alaska is just stupid.
Yeah, no, it is. It is pretty crazy. It's trying to get people scheduled, and they're like, oh, I'm going this way, and I'm going here, and
And when you have a good weather day, because I mean, summer in Alaska, weather's still hit or miss,
right?
But when you have a good weather day, it's like you better move the podcast outside or on a boat or something, or otherwise people aren't going to show up.
Yeah, I had a conversation with a pastor friend of mine in Kodiak, and he was talking about on Sunday morning. He's like, "Yeah, we either have 80 people or 20, depending on how good fishing is that day." So,
that's about right.
Yeah. Well, they go from, you know, it's like fishers of men, fishers of fish. Like, they're just going back and forth. That's probably not the correct thing to do. But today this is going to be kind of like a sporadic miniseries is what I'm going to call it, where we're taking a word that we think is probably misunderstood or maybe not put in its proper context.
Okay.
And we just have a conversation about it. Mm-hmm. And today that word is hypocrite.
Mm-hmm. Hypocrite.
Hypocrite. It's a fun word. Which, by the way, is not related to the Hippocratic Oath. Those are spelled very differently. I know because I went to go try to spell this for my notes, and I definitely put hippo instead of hypo. So that was my mistake. So a couple of things that are interesting about this. So hypocrite is first of all, a Greek word. I believe it's upokritos. Yeah. And it means play actor, and it actually has a lot of bearing in tragedies and acting and the Colosseum and presentation plays and stuff. So in the time of Jesus, like if you remember in the Gospels, Jesus is born in Bethlehem, but he grows up in Nazareth, right? Nazareth is this town of like 1,200, 1,600 people, depending on estimates during that time. Around 3 to 4 kilometers away from Nazareth is this city by the name of Sepphoris. I know you guys are just like, yeah, this is really interesting, Ben. Mm-hmm. Sepphoris runs somewhere between 20 and 30,000 people. So it's a much bigger city nearby. And specifically, they actually have a Colosseum that you actually would do acting in. And so it was a really big hub as far as metropolitan, the arts, like it attracted a lot of these people. Now, Jesus, growing up as a carpenter / stonemason, right, given Joseph's profession, it is likely that both Joseph and any other stonemasons that would do a lot of work in Sepphoris, given the high demand of the area there, and stonemasons not being they're not a plethora of stonemasons.
No.
And so Jesus grows up in Nazareth, but it's around this place of Sepphoris where they have this thing, these people, these actors, and they're called hypocrites.
Yeah.
Right? The upokritos. And their job is exactly what an actor is supposed to be. They're supposed to play for the audience.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's what they're supposed to do. Like, that's same thing that actors do today. Like, actors put on a character, but they're not necessarily putting on a true character. What they're doing is they're actually presenting themselves for the purpose of the applause of the audience.
Yeah.
Now, typically, the audience is in on the joke or in on the story, but that's what an actor does. So,
yes.
Now let's talk about the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Hypocrites. Now, when you grew up in the church, how do people typically talk about hypocrites?
I mean, it was a variation.
Yeah.
I mean, there were some people who use it in the right context, like you're talking about.
Yeah.
There were also the people who were like, you don't like the same type of chicken I do, you hypocrite. I'm sorry, that was an exaggeration, but
sadly not that far of an exaggeration. So
right. Like, I've been called a hypocrite because I've disagreed on minor theological nuances mm-hmm. with people. Like, I think it comes down to really the difference between your personal convictions and gospel truth.
Yeah.
Like, and we've talked about this some too, mm-hmm. but I mean, there's some people who have, let's pick on music, right? Mm-hmm. There's some people who have the personal conviction of, I'm only going to listen to worship music.
Mm-hmm.
It was great. There's some people who don't have that personal conviction mm-hmm. on their life. Is one person following Jesus less than the other person?
Yes.
Right. But that's what we do, right?
Right. That's the exactly answer, what we do. Yeah.
To clarify, the answer is no.
The answer is no. And
but that's what we do, is we say, oh, this person's more holy, or quote unquote, because they are listening to only Christian music, while this person is not. They are less holy, so they must have some sort of hypocrisy in their life or some sort of sin in their life to where they're just not mature enough to understand.
Right. Or there are people, I was thinking about, there is a ministry, Cupcake Girls.
Mm-hmm.
You familiar with that one? Where they go in and they minister to strippers and, mm-hmm. and people in that industry,
yeah.
right? And people, they've gotten a ton of flack for what yep. they do. And yet there's a lot of fruit bearing, like people coming to Christ, people fighting freedom, all yep. these through their ministry, because they're willing to go to dark places.
Uh-huh.
Right? And they've received a ton of flack because people are like, oh, you know, you're being hypocritical because you're going to this place. No, because of their faith, they're going uh-huh. to these places.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking about, because we're actually going to be talking about in James, so we'll probably come back yeah. to this really quick, but James makes a statement. He says, if you say, I love my brother, and he's freezing cold, and you're like, man, I feel for you, uh-huh. go on your way, and God bless you, and you do nothing for their physical need, you don't really care about them,
mm-hmm.
right? And like that is what a hypocrite is that you may be playing things up maybe for the appeal, or a couple weeks ago when we were talking with Pastor Sarah, we talked about people who are like, well, I give X amount to the church. And you're like,
so?
Okay. Like, that's great. I'm good for you. And
Jesus praised the woman who gave two mites over the people who were given plenty.
Yeah. So. And it's one of those things where you're playing up for the applause. And so I thought it might be kind of fun. I went and just went to BibleGateway.com. So there might be others. So if you have others, like, feel free to send them to us, but I just went to Bible Gateway and typed in hypocrite and just pulled out like the top 18. But places in the Gospels where Jesus talks about hypocrites, and like just this idea of, when are you playing for the applause and when are you actually feeding into the kingdom of God?
Yeah,
because a lot of things he mentions aren't necessarily bad things,
mm-hmm.
but when you're doing them for the sake of applause, they're bad things. For example, giving money to the church is not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
When you're giving money to the church because you feel like you're owed a modicum of authority or something, that you're trying to buy authority. There's a guy in the Bible who wanted the Holy Spirit that Peter had, and he's like, well, I'll buy this from you. Like, here, I'll give you some money, and then I can have it. And he's like, well, that's not how that works, buddy.
Uh-huh.
That's not how that works at all. You know, so when you're doing it for the applause, for the accolades, or people who give charitably and then make massive announcements over it because look how good I am, right? You're playing for the applause. Now, I want to specify, because I think that you go too far, like people being recognized for their altruistic behavior, for the good things that they do, is not a bad thing.
Yeah.
The question is, what's the motivation of the heart, which is a lot of what the Bible is talking about in throughout yes. its text.
Yes.
Like, what's the motivation here when I do these things out here?
Mm-hmm.
And it makes a big difference. So the first place, there's a number of these where Jesus is actually talking during the Sermon on the Mount.
Mm-hmm.
And so in chapter 6, he actually is talking about giving. And he says, so when you give to the needy, do not announce it with trumpets, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and on the streets, uh-huh. to be honored by others. Truly, I tell you, they have received their reward in full. So is the issue giving to the needy?
No.
No. The issue is you have these trumpets and these people announcing and being like, look at Spencer. He's so great. He gave money to the poor people, mm-hmm. you know, like that's a problem, because all the focus is actually on you.
Mm-hmm.
It's not actually on the people or the kingdom of God, or like you're playing for the applause of people.
There's a juxtaposition here, though,
mm-hmm.
that I think we have to address a little bit, too, is at the same time, we want to lead by example.
Mm-hmm.
And so to lead by example, people have to be able to see it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So there is this balance of, people do have to be able to see that you, if you're leading by example, that you are modeling these things.
Correct.
Right? And so, but sometimes in modeling that, we can take on the triumphant position of look how great I am, look what I do, look what I give.
Right.
Right. And Ian, that can be unintentional. Like, we might not be intentionally doing that. So, I mean, examples being, like, mm-hmm. we do a lot for our churches, mm-hmm. right? For the church that we go to, we both do a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had people be like, oh, I've had people come up to me and, like, try to put me on a higher pedestal than mm-hmm. I am. And same with you,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, no, we're just trying to serve our body.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We want to model this, but we don't want to be doing it for our own applause.
Right. Well, and also it becomes this thing of like every modeling job is an invitation, right? Mm-hmm. Like I'm running after Jesus. Like, why don't you come with me?
Yeah.
Like, that's what we're doing. Well, and I did hear specifically on the money thing, there's a story that was told by a Bible scholar mm-hmm. about the basins that they would actually give money into. And the way that they were constructed is you could either just like put your money down and we go in, but there was actually a way that you could actually sling the money in to make a really like loud noise. Like it was like a cacophonous noise mm-hmm. that this was happening. And they were talking about how it was practice for the wealthier people to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Even to the point where like you know how like smaller denominations equal bigger amounts of money, they would get smaller denominations so they were throwing more coin into something.
Yeah.
Right. Like that's not modeling. Mm-mm. That's showboating.
Yeah.
Like, are you paying for the applause of people? And like, people should notice you. Actually, I had that conversation with somebody about fasting because they're like, well, I'm fasting, but nobody's supposed to know. And I was like, no, people will know you're fasting. I was like, but you shouldn't be walking around going, oh, I'm so hungry because I'm fasting to the mm-hmm. Lord. Like, if you are a teacher and you have disciples or you have people who are learning from you, you should model that behavior.
Yeah.
But once again, are you playing to applause or are you playing for the kingdom mm-hmm. of God?
And you might not even be going for the applause.
Right.
They might just start giving you the applause and you might be like, oh, I like this.
Right.
Right. And then that's where we need to come check ourselves.
That's a dangerous place. I've found myself in the past in worship music,
mm-hmm.
right? When you lead music,
mm-hmm.
it's like I definitely have fallen victim. I don't want to say victim because like it's my fault that I fell for it.
Yeah.
But I've fallen prey to this whole thing of like people are like, oh, you're just anointed by God to do these things. And you're like, I am anointed by God. You know what I mean? Like yeah. you start to hear it and you start to let it kind of play in your mind. And, but like that is like, those are the roots of sin. And like yeah. they really start to really corrupt you over time.
Yeah. And so the other thing that makes it hard, especially in American culture,
mm-hmm.
is the fact that the squeaky wheel gets oil, right? If you are doing things well, there's a chance that like people are going to notice, but they're going to be like, oh, that's going really well. And we're mm-hmm. just going to leave that alone. Right?
Right.
Even though there might be issues that need to be fixed.
Right.
But then the people who are like, hey, look at me, look at these problems, let's address these problems. And they like boast themselves up. A lot of times people give attention to that because mm-hmm. they're more vocal than the people who are like, hey, who are exercising what Peter says in First Peter, where he's like, hey, work diligently with your hands, be people of good rapport. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so like I think there's just a little more facets to it culturally. If we apply it to our culture today, where it's like, okay, like how do we live this out in a healthy way?
Right. And I think there is a lot of, in the Bible, there's a lot of like be in this world, but not of this world. So you have mm-hmm. to be in the world and you got to walk in the world, but you got to not be of this world.
Mm-hmm.
To gain your life, you actually have to lose it.
Yep.
To be the first, you have to be the last.
Exactly.
To be the greatest, you have to be the servant. And a lot of like these competing ideas that force you to walk, oddly enough, Jesus will talk about it, walk a very narrow road,
mm-hmm.
right? That you're not really, it's not really this way or that way. Yeah. And we've talked about in the past, there is a lot of freedom in like having absolute, this is what you do.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot harder to walk and with that tension and wrestling,
mm-hmm.
but it's a lot more full of life.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When your theological stances and you're walking out your faith and fear and trembling, you're like, okay, how do I love people well, but also hold them accountable? And like, am I erring too much side? And having these conversations with yourself on a regular basis are actually a good thing.
Yeah.
Not a bad thing.
Yeah. How do I model my life with Jesus well, but not lift that up above my relationship with Jesus.
Correct.
Right. If that sentence makes any sense.
It does, you know, and if you're sitting around and you're like, man, I love talking to people about Jesus, but now I have to wonder, am I loving people well enough? That is a good question.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's always a good question. And then if you're on the other side, you're like, I always want to love people and treat them with respect, but I feel like I'm not holding anybody accountable. That's also a good question.
Yeah.
Right? Like, those are good things to hold in tandem. And the reality is like, well, I've never walked on a tightrope well. I've never walked well on a tightrope, I should say. Uh-huh. But finding your balance, you do a little bit of teetering mm-hmm. back and forth. Like, as you learn to find your balance. Now, and once you've done it a really long time, like those people, they just jump up there and they're like, right across it.
Mm-hmm.
Not me.
Yeah.
I'd be like, whoa, really heavy one way or the other.
I remember when slack lines were becoming just a big thing.
Yeah.
And people would watch videos of these people who were like really good at slack line. Like, oh, and they go buy a slack line. And then it was the most entertaining thing to watch.
My favorite thing is when they actually video it the first time they do it.
Yeah. And then it's like, oh boy, like you can't even stand up on this thing. And then like, and so there's actually a scene, from The Office
mm-hmm.
where there's
not a sponsor
where there's a slack line and someone walks across it and then Dwight's like, I can do this, and then he just like beats himself up.
Yep.
Like just like, yeah. And it's a lot of times that's what our life looks like. It's mm-hmm. like, it's like, this is what I'm doing, and really it's like, no, you're trying to do yep. that, but that's not what's going on. So like, we can have the same thing going on when we're following Jesus, where we can be like, I'm following Jesus and this is what I'm doing, and then you look at their life and it's like, are you sure?
Mm-hmm.
Like, coming back to the modeling idea, though, there's that tension, though.
Mm-hmm.
There's that tension. There's that balancing act of like, hey, we want to model this, but we don't want to model this to the point where we're like, hey, look at how well I'm modeling my life with Jesus.
Right. Well, and to your point, actually, the next two, Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount. So when you pray,
yeah,
right, the expectation is you're going to pray,
uh-huh.
right? Don't be like the hypocrites.
Uh-huh.
They love to pray standing in the synagogues and on street corners to be seen by others. Truly, I tell you, they receive their reward in full. Now, yep. the second half of that is, it says go into your closet. But one of the things that was told to me by Marty Solomon, which I wasn't aware of, is that their prayer shawl, when they actually put it over their head, is considered their prayer closet.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, that's interesting. I did not know that. So that actually makes it way different than actually going and finding a closet, mm-hmm. which also makes sense if you've seen like Middle Eastern architecture. They didn't really have closets.
No.
They're not mid-century American. And so praying, and that's when you fast.
Mm-hmm.
When you fast. Don't look somber as the hypocrites do, for they disfigure their faces to show you they are fasting. Truly, I tell you, they receive their reward in full. Once again, this is something we put on display. Like, we're going to fast, and it's okay to even talk to people why you're fasting. I'm fasting because I'm seeking God an answer in this, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm fasting for a breakthrough in this in my life,
mm-hmm.
right? And so people can also join you in praying with you or for you and those types of things. But when you're like, I'm hungry. Oh, you know, I haven't eaten for 42 days. That's a long time, but I probably would grumble too if I didn't eat for 42 days.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not a, it's good to fast. And it's good. It's even okay to talk about fasting, but what is the purpose? Is it because you're talking about what God is doing in you, or are you playing for applause?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want people to see the suffering servant,
mm-hmm.
or do you want to serve the suffering servant?
Yeah.
That's Jesus, by the way, mm-hmm. in case anybody didn't get the Isaiah reference.
Mm-hmm.
Here's one that we've talked about a lot. It says this, you hypocrite, first take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye.
Mm-hmm.
We have a tendency in Christian culture to judge everybody else by their actions and ourselves by our intentions.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say that one more time because I think it probably goes by quickly. We have a tendency to judge other people by their actions and ourselves by our intentions. This is very clear when you're having a conversation with someone and they're like, well, I didn't mean for that to do blah, blah, blah. Well, first of all, that's not an apology. Right. If you actually feel bad about something that happened, that's not an apology. And whether or not you meant for something to happen, it did happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, it's, it, this is very prominent in, especially when you go across to, denominational lines. It's very prominent that we look at other Christians and we tend to judge them by what actually happens versus what they're intending to happen. And rather than having grace with people, we're standing in judgment. I was like, and then we have a completely blind eye to what's going on around us.
Mm-hmm. So this verse is actually more of a trust statement. It's mm-hmm. more of a, who do you trust? Mm-hmm. Because if the verse is applied to everybody,
right,
which is, this verse is applicable to everybody, mm-hmm. right, then we all have the plank in our eye.
Right.
And who's doing the work to remove that plank?
Right. Theoretically, you and God.
Yeah, theoretically, you and God, right?
Yeah.
Are doing the work to remove that plank so that you can see clearly and then be a vessel of the Lord to help someone else with theirs.
Be a vessel of the Lord.
Yep.
Not a vessel of you.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so oftentimes when you look at this and be like, we look at this verse like, we need to correct all these things in our lives and then other people's lives. It's like, no, it's the Lord doing the work. Because he's doing the work in your life, and if he's mm-hmm. and if this is applicable to everybody, and he's removing the plank from my eye, then I have to also assume that he's doing the same work for you, removing mm-hmm. the plank from your eye,
right?
Right. And the question, and then there does come a point where the Lord might use you mm-hmm. to be like, "Hey, you're going to remove that. You're going to help me finish getting the last speck out."
Right.
Right. Because we're talking the difference between a board and a speck.
Right.
And so, but the question is, who do you trust? Because if we're stepping in being like, hey, I'm just going to jump on and try to get somebody else's spec out of mm-hmm. their eye, we're saying, all right, we don't actually trust that the Lord is working.
Yeah, and it's really hard, by the way, when you see something broken, not to want to try to jump in and fix it.
Oh, very hard.
Like, I run into that all the time
uh-huh.
in my the way that my brain works. I'm like, oh, it's super easy. We'll just fix that. Just go and do this. And if I did that, it wouldn't actually fix anything because nobody actually learned how to do any better.
Yep.
Right? Or actually control any better. I run into that in business a lot when I see mm-hmm. certain businesses struggling with X, Y, or Z. Right? Yeah. I'm like, oh, I could step in and fix it. But I'm like, that's not actually going to be helpful.
Well, and taking time to evaluate the problem too. Mm-hmm. Right? And seeing and taking time to evaluate the problem and seeing, okay, what actually needs to be done. Is super helpful as well.
Mm-hmm.
So like I'm doing a bunch of house projects around mm-hmm. my house, right? If I just jumped in and started just breaking things up,
mm-hmm.
it's not actually going to help.
Right.
Like you got to go in with a plan.
Yeah.
You got to go in and say, okay, here's what's wrong. Here's what needs to come out. Here's what needs to be fixed. This is how we're going to address this. Here's the supplies I need. Right. We do the same thing in our lives mm-hmm. when we're evaluating sin in our lives is we're not just saying, oh, this is sinful. Get rid of it. We have to sit there and say, all right, Lord, help me evaluate how deep does this go?
Mm-hmm.
Where is the root of this? Right. If I just cut a plant off at the top, it's going to grow back.
Right. We have these trees in Alaska. They're called alder trees, and they're probably elsewhere besides Alaska. But what a lot of people do is they'll go and they'll chop them down, but uh-huh. they won't rip up the roots.
Yeah, and they just grow back.
Yeah, and they grow back quickly.
Uh huh.
Like they grow back so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Like the ones I chopped down, I think, like 3 or 4 years ago, they're already still at like knee height now. Uh-huh. And it's kind of one of those things like you're like, okay, well, you can chop it down. And yeah, sure, that takes care of it for a period of time. But if you're actually going to cultivate a land, you got to go and take the things up by the roots.
Yep.
Right? And if we're going to have a life cultivated to being a follower of Jesus, which I believe that's what it means to apprentice in the way,
mm-hmm.
right? To cultivate your life to actually be a place. This story of Jesus tells about this farmer who spreads seed.
Yeah.
Yes, you should know what kind of soil you currently are, but the goal is always to be good soil. And so if you have thorns and thistles in your life, well, you know there's a solution to that, right?
Yeah.
You tear them up.
Yeah.
You till the ground. You remove the rocks. You know, you do these type of things too with the work of the Holy Spirit in your life. And I was like, the goal is to actually be this fruitful place where we can receive the word, and through the tending of the gardener, we grow into 30, 60, 100 times the yield that's put into our life.
Yeah.
It's always the work of God in us, through us, with us.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
So one of the places he brings up hypocrites a lot is, not surprisingly, talking to the religious leaders mm-hmm. of the day. There's a reason why even incorrect when your word is used incorrectly, it's often applied to religious people.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he has a section in Jesus has a section where he gives seven woes to the teachers of the law and Pharisees. So one of them, it says, "Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites." Mm-hmm. So you who are playing to the crowd. "You shut the door of the kingdom of heaven in people's faces. You yourselves do not enter, nor will you let those enter who are trying to."
Yeah.
First of all, that's whew. Mm-hmm. that's not a great woe to get.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really where you're making this barrier to the kingdom of God so high. Once again, this comes back to your idea of trust.
Mm-hmm.
Do we actually trust the work of God to do in people's lives, right?
Mm-hmm.
I have been in locations with people who profess to follow Jesus, and they talk about, they're like, okay, well, now you need to do this and this and this and this and this and this and this, right? Like, they give this litany of things, especially right after somebody says yes.
Yeah.
Right? And I think maybe the temptation of what I'm saying is saying that I don't believe in discipleship after conversion. That's not what I'm talking about. But when you're giving people this list of things like these do's and don'ts and expecting their life to instantly rearrange itself rather than God actually working through it, I feel like you're setting people up for failure.
Yeah.
Right? That you're not actually trusting the work of the Holy Spirit to work in people's lives as they grow.
Mm-hmm.
Actually even giving people a chance to grow.
Yeah.
You know, the cultivation of a plant doesn't happen the second that it pops out of the seed.
Yeah. You get growth takes time.
Yeah.
It takes time.
The next one he says is, "Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. You travel over land and sea to win a single convert. And when you succeeded, you make them twice as much a child of hell as you are."
Okay. So lots of thoughts there.
Yeah, lots of thoughts
lots
there.
Lots of thoughts there. All right, sure. We'll springboard into this. All right, this whole conversion discipleship topic. Let's just go there for a moment. We often take this route of like, okay, how do we track converts, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. It's like, okay. And then they convert. They're like, oh, great, you're saved. And then one or two things happens usually. One is that you ignore them and hope they get better and improve.
Which is not a good method, by the way.
Or two, you apply this list of dictates of this is what it looks like to follow Jesus. And then you show an image of what you're supposed to look like, negating the fact that you're supposed to be in relationship with him.
Mm-hmm.
And then the relationship piece are often like we often can treat as a side, as like a footnote, right? Of like, hey, you want to look this way. You don't want to drink, don't chew, don't date those who do type thing.
Right.
And, oh, by the way, you're also going to be in a relationship with Jesus.
Right.
And it's like, well, shouldn't we, first off, like, shouldn't it start with the relationship piece of like when we're saying yes to Jesus, we're entering into a relationship with him,
right?
A lifelong commitment, a covenant with him. We are going to draw closer to him. He's going to draw closer to us. Our relationship with him is going to be strengthened. And over time, while that is happening, we are going to be converted more into his image and into his likeness and look more like him and be better versions of him to the world.
The ironic thing about that is none of our other relationships would we ever do that.
Yeah.
Like, for example, we'll just take marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the second we married, I didn't tell my wife, okay, here's the things you're going to do.
Uh-huh.
Well, at least I wouldn't have and
well, the people not who, been smacked. People who do that often end up divorced.
Yeah, very quickly, right? Because rather than focusing on relationship, getting to know each other, investing in each other, spending time together, joining spiritually, physically, emotionally, right? And then from that, you become something, right? You're dictating what you believe that they're going to be. And rather than actually listening to God and relying on God for his wisdom in this situation.
Yeah.
And that's problematic. And let's even use like you and me, for example, we met three or four years ago.
Three years ago.
And can you imagine if we placed expectations on each other the first time we hung out for who we were going to be to each other?
Oh, yeah. And like we just wouldn't be able to do that, and our friendship would have ended very quickly. We have very different lives.
Very different lives.
Right? Like you, I mean, like for example, like you have the luxury of staying in bed till 7 every morning, right? I do not.
It is a luxury, let me tell you.
Right? Like for those who are like, what do you mean? I was like, his wife's an early riser, gets up with the kids. My wife leaves for work at 3:30 in the morning, so I have no choice but to get up with my kid.
And your kid is an early riser.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so there's both of those things.
Oh, yeah. We've had the number of people who've been like, oh, just put her to bed later. And I'm like, it doesn't work.
People who say that, like when they're like, oh, just put her to bed later, they'll sleep later. I was like, no, they won't. They will not.
My kid's up at 5 every morning, 5:30 every morning, ready to roll. And like gets up and is like, I want breakfast now. And it's like, okay. But like we have very different lives. And like if you put the expectations of your life on me, I would be like, bro, that's not going to work.
Well, and like you think about like another thing like I do that you don't do is I read a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like I mean, I'm not saying Spencer reads. I'm not saying he doesn't read. Mm-hmm. He learned last year.
I read lots of TikToks, man.
lots of TikToks. But like I read, you know, hundreds of books a year, right? And like for me, like that's a place where like it allows my mind to stretch and mold and stuff in ways that I'm not able to do other ways, right? Well, and it's a way that connects with me. It doesn't work for everybody.
Yeah, and we read, like, the books that we read are different.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you read a lot of fantasy stuff, mm-hmm. which is great. And, like...
A lot of nonfiction, too, but, like, yeah I would read a lot of everything. I just... Except murder mystery. Sorry, guys, if you're a murder mystery person.
Like, versus me, like, really the only two things I really read is theology and history.
Yeah.
Like, those are really the only things that I'm interested in reading about.
Yep.
And so, like, we have different preferences on that.
You prefer your fantasy and cinema form.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah. I am 100% unashamed the type of person where you're like, oh, this is a great fantasy book. I'm like, awesome. I'm going to wait till the movie comes out and never read the book and then be your friend who's like, that movie was awesome.
Yeah. Oh, by the way. Okay. So, little aside. We'll get back to hypocrites in just a second. But one of the worst... they say, you know, like you don't curse people this way, like curse them this way. As you say, I hope your favorite book is badly adapted into a movie.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, oh, that hurts. That hurts. That hurts too much. Uh-huh. So this idea of conversion and expectation, right? And when you have people, especially when you have them conform to you.
Yeah.
Coming back to this idea of going over land and sea and making them twice the son of hell you are. We don't want people to become like us. We want them to become like Jesus.
Yeah.
Right. And hopefully, like, if we're saying, like, hey, when you see Jesus in me, follow after those things. But, like, even if I'm teaching and discipling somebody, I'm like, I make mistakes all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want people to become me. And, like, if I was discipling you, you shouldn't become me.
No.
You should become like Jesus if he were you.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it's this difference of expectation. I was like, because what I don't want you to do is I don't want you to double down and make something that is a my personality. Yeah. My relationship with God, something that is about me, a staple of, you say, everybody needs to do this.
Mm-hmm.
You end up with some really damaging theological ideas, which we've definitely seen over the last 400 years.
Well, and more so we've seen over the last 10 years.
Correct.
I mean, we see that with social media, like, and we're one of those people now, right? Where we're
darn TikTokers.
I know. Where we're posting our thoughts, our opinions on stuff, and then there's going to be people who agree and disagree, and then there's going to be people who are going to be like, I wholeheartedly disagree with everything they said, and here's the reason why, and then they'll stitch us in a reel or whatever, right? Like, that's going to happen because we have a myriad of opinions and just way easier access to sharing those opinions. Mm-hmm. When the reality is... how are you loving God and how are you loving people? Mm-hmm. And are you doing those things? Because that's the root of not being a hypocrite.
Right. Well, and that even gets back to the whole root of why we have this podcast, right? Mm-hmm. Is to have authentic conversation about faith.
Yeah.
Right? You and I agree on a lot of things, but we don't agree on everything. And the fact that we don't, it helps us actually have real conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And actually talk about those things. Or who was it that said that we're always arguing with each other?
I don't know.
I remember somebody said that once, and I was like, I didn't even know we were arguing. I thought we were just talking.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's okay to talk and also to disagree and to have, like, those kind of conversations. It's totally fine.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
To put it in context, just so you guys know, Ben and I are both the type of people where it's like we can disagree and be like, okay.
Yeah.
And then I'll be like, Ben, you're wrong. And he'll be like, no, Spencer, you're wrong. We're like, all right, well, we're going to walk away from this. And then I'm just going to know Ben's always wrong on that front. So.
Oh, man. Mm-hmm. All right. This is, we have a bunch more we could do, but I want to just stop on this one because I think this is going to be a good one for us to, because I think you guys are getting this idea of playing for the crowd, right? I want to get this last one because I think it's a really important one about talking about relationship with God.
Yeah.
Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. You give a tenth of your spices, mint, dill, cumin, but you've neglected the more important matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faithfulness. You should have practiced the latter without neglecting the former. Okay. Frequently, when I've heard people talk about that verse, they're like, oh, well, you need to focus on the weightier portion of the law. It's like, okay, two things you need to know. Yes, you do. Mm-hmm. Love, justice, faithfulness, these type of things are more important than the tithe, right? Yeah. Making sure that you're giving a tenth of your cumin and your dill and your mint, because I know all of you are growing that.
Mm-hmm. I think my wife is trying to. I think all those things.
That probably sounds about right. Like these are not things that you shouldn't do. Uh-huh. Like they are legitimate things that need to happen. But when these are your focus, we told an analogy once. It's like if somebody walks in and they say, I have a headache and I see a knife sticking out of their side. It's not that the headache doesn't matter.
You're going to deal with the knife, though.
I'm going to deal with the knife first because the knife is a much bigger deal. Mm-hmm. And that's like a negative example. But when I'm going and having a conversation with people, people in the world, people who are in the church, I'm going to first focus on trying to love people well.
Yep.
And it's not that the things in their life don't matter. Mm-hmm. It's that they are not the highest priority. The highest priority is making sure that they know they're loved, that they are welcome into this kingdom of God. And that there's an invitation for them.
Yeah.
Right? Those other things will take care of themselves. But once again, to your point, who do I trust? Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm inviting them into this kingdom lifestyle, and I don't want to, like, there shouldn't be a bait and switch for sure. Yeah. Like, you need to let people know, it's like, hey, if you follow after Jesus, like, it's his way.
Yep.
You know, and like, he'll have patience with you, but it's his way. You don't get to dictate the terms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. I agree.
So once again, this idea of hypocrites, it's not just shallowly like, oh, you're a hypocrite because you don't do things the way that I think that you should do them. When you claim to follow after something, but your life doesn't reflect it, when mm-hmm. you play for the audience, when you do things for the attention of other people, rather than to actually bring glory to God, you take on the role of hypocrite.
Yeah.
Because you're like an actor playing for the audience. Mm-hmm. And that's not who we want to be.
Yeah.
Well, at least that's not who I want to be. I mean, maybe mm-hmm. somebody, that's exactly who you want to be. In which case, I trust Jesus to work through you. You know? So, thanks for being here with us, guys. This is a shorter episode this week. We'll be back next week talking about the book of James.
Yep.
That's going to be fun. I will recommend that you read chapters 1 and 2 in prep. And you're going to recognize when you go through that, there's a lot of references to Torah. And so if you have not gone through
virtually all references to Torah.
So if you have not gone through season 1 in our conversations, may just check out a few portions of that because we'll probably backwards reference a fair amount.
Yeah. Till next time.
And that's a wrap for today's episode of Love and Context. We hope you enjoyed this engaging conversation and gained valuable insights into the powerful message of love within the Bible.
We'd love to hear from you and continue the conversation. Connect with us by sending us your questions, thoughts, and suggestions to loveandcontext@gmail.com. We greatly appreciate your feedback and ideas for future episodes.
Stay connected with us on social media for updates, behind-the-scenes content, and additional resources. You can find us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and Facebook at Love and Context. Don't forget to hit that follow button to stay up to date with the latest episodes and join our growing community.
Thank you for being part of the Love and Context family. Remember, love is at the heart of it all. Until next time, keep seeking wisdom, embracing love, and living out your faith in the context of today's world.
Dude, that
podcast.
That picture's so much better.
Podcast, it is.
Yeah. Podcast.
We podcast.
What would it be like if for the first 15 minutes we just like, podcast.
People wouldn't listen.
It's the podcast. You don't think a few people would just like stay there? Just curious like, if we ever actually get around to it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. All right.
Nick might.
Nick might.
Nick would be like, I'm going to time this and see how long they say podcast.